Hello, good evening. Thanks for coming at this time of the day, especially after this panel. I hope you are not still full of hate on each other. Today I'm going to tell you some history and some stories about the great field of piracy, because pirates are not just people downloading stuff from the internet and doing a little bit of politics with a very single-issued agenda, sorry for saying that. Piracy includes every criminal act of violence, detention, rape, or depredation committed for private ends by the crew or the passengers of a private ship or aircraft that is directed in the high seas against another ship, aircraft, or against persons or property on board on a ship or aircraft. By the way, this law against piracy is one of the first examples of an universal jurisdiction. But the question is, if you read that, it sounds like they are not really friendly, they are criminals, so why do we like them? Because they are cool, they don't like authorities, they have good music and a very fancy dress code. The history of piracy can be told together, yeah? You see? You wouldn't steal a handbag, would you? The history of piracy can be told together with the history of economical shipping. Since the first merchant decided to transport his things from A to B with a ship, the first pirate decided to take all these goods and maybe kill the captain of another ship. Well, besides stealing, another big part of piracy was always kidnapping. Including some famous people. 75 before Christ, Julius Caesar was kidnapped by Sicilian pirates, and they wanted 20 talents of gold for him, and Caesar said, "Hey, come on, I am Julius Caesar, you have to want 50 talents of gold." So they said, "Okay, we want 50 talents of gold." The Romans paid the 50 talents of gold, Caesar came back and killed all the pirates. Another famous pirates in very old times were the Vikings. No, this is Caesar, sorry. Here are the Vikings. Oh, feel the power of this picture? I do. Between 783 and 1066, they raided the coasts and the rivers and cities of all Central Europe. In the Mediterranean, the power was held by Muslim pirates. In 9/11, they actually attacked Rome. I don't know if you know that, and they damaged the Vatican. Unfortunately, not enough. And for centuries, Muslim pirates, mostly based in northern Africa, did their job by annoying the Europeans in the Mediterranean Sea. There is a funny side fact: in 1797, the government of the United States of America made a peace contract with the state of Tripolis. And in this peace contract, the U.S. reclaimed that the United States of America are no Christian state at all. So they can do a peace contract with a Muslim country. Well, the old days, no? If you think the nationality of pirates, you maybe just think about English pirates, Irish pirates, French pirates, and American pirates. But, beloved Germans here, don't worry, you had some awesome pirates as well. They were called the Victual Brothers, or Likedela, what is in German Gleichteiler. I don't know how to translate that in English, Gleichteiler. Like it means everyone got the same thing. Yeah. At the end of the 14th century, a North German geopolitical corporation called the Hanse was in fight with the King of Denmark. They were interested in profit, of course. So the business of the Danish kingdom had to be hacked. Hacked, no? Therefore, they allowed poor, blue-blooded peers to make piracy with so-called letters of mark. In German, it's the Kaperbrief. Kaperbrief, if you are a pirate and you get a Kaperbrief, you are not really a pirate anymore because you are working for the state. So you do the same job as before, but it's okay. So if you are a German pirate with a Kaperbrief from the German government, you can kill all the English people and took all their goods, and it's okay. Remember, get a Kaperbrief and everything is okay. Then you're not a pirate. That was all over the last centuries, and yeah. All the time it was the same. Well, the Danish king was quite pissed and decided to do the same. So In this proxy war, pirates were fighting against pirates and merchant ships and pirate ships and merchant ships. So they were just fighting pirates. It was just a question of the letter of mark, so that you always knew who you are fighting for. But the Victual brothers mostly, they didn't care about these letters. So they got the letter, attacked the Danish ship, then they thought, well, come on, let's do the same with the German ship as well. After some years, the Hanse and Denmark, they made peace with each other, but the lords of Mecklenburg, they didn't. They allowed pirates to sell all their robbed goods in their harbors, and they said, come on, pirates, fuck the Danish, do it, come on, come to us, you can sell all your stuff and things. In the year 1394, the whole maritime trade in the Baltic Sea was unable to function. So there was no more business at all because it was all full of pirates. In their biggest success, the Victual brothers drove to the Norwegian city of Bergen, which was part of Denmark in these days, took all they found and sold it in the harbors of Rostock and Wismar, the most important harbors of Mecklenburg. Don't forget, those pirates were working for, and they had this letter, and so, yeah, okay. In the same year, they conquered the island Gotland, which would become their home base for the next decade. So they thought, well, you know, with all this political stuff, it's always a little problem who you are fighting for. You mostly don't know who you're fighting for. So let's have a little island where we can do what we want. Well, the Hanse, Denmark, and Mecklenburg finally made peace because they found out that war is quite a problem if your main interest is in making money with each other. But the pirates, they were still living on Gotland and doing their job. So an alliance of all merchant cities and states decided to banish them and give the island to the Teutonic Order, which is not an East German neo-Nazi community, but a bunch of religious knights. The Victual brothers, they went to East Frisia, Ostfriesland, where they found a quiet collective society in these days. The people there, they didn't have to pay taxes, and most of the time they were fighting each other. And they were called, the bosses of these villages were called Häuptling, chiefs. Well, the pirates decided to stay there, work for the local chiefs, and were active as never before, and that worked pretty well. But that was too much for the Hanse, so they decided to destroy the Victual brothers at all. A lot of money was invested in warships and soldiers, and beginning in 1401, the piracy in the North Sea began to vanish, and the great days of German piracy were over. But, you know, they were pirates, and pirates were always quite a good inspiration for songs, stories, and legends. And one of those legends is the story of Klaus Störtebeker. I think there are Störtebeker Festspiele 2010 as well, but I didn't get the right booster, so maybe you can have a look. Nothing about his life is really proved, but the story, it's just very, very nice. For those of, do you know the story of Klaus Störtebeker?
No.
Who knows the story of Klaus Störtebeker? Okay, sorry for telling it again. Störtebeker was the leader of the Victual brothers in their last years. He was captured, brought to Hamburg to be beheaded, you know, geköpft, and yeah, that was, if you're a pirate, you have to lose your head. That was the law in these days. Well, yeah, it's quite still the law, but what was, by the way, yeah, that was the penalty for every caught. Okay, before his death, he made a deal with the mayor of Hamburg. He said, okay, you behead me, I will stand up and run over the stage, and here is my crew standing, and every man I pass during running without my head like a chicken will become free. The mayor said, yeah, of course. So they took his head, Störtebeker stood up, and walked all over the stage. Then some asshole, nobody remembers his name, he stopped him. They're not really fair. Anyway, the mayor betrayed him and killed every one of them. But never trust a politician, I would say. Okay. Let's come now to all our first picture when we talk about piracy. It's pirates in the Caribbean. The fact that the piracy there became very famous And it's even called the Golden Age of Piracy. Depends with which historian you're talking. For me, I decided the Golden Age of Piracy was between 1690 and 1727. If you know me, if you want to ask me why, I can't give you an answer, but I think it sounds very good, 16. So why in the Caribbean? The Caribbean islands provided a lot of hiding places, secret coves, and uncharted islands. Very good if you want, if you don't want to be found. Places where pirates could take on fresh water and something to eat, rest up and lie in wait a little bit, drink rum, you know, all these stereotypes, which are quite true. The location was perfect. It was lying just on the route taken by the heavily laden treasure fleets from South America back to Spain and Portugal. In these days, like in the 17th century, the most important sea nation was Spain. So they drove to South America, fucked all the Indians there, took the silver and gold and brought it back to Europe. So the pirates thought that the best way, just take the gold and the silver. And that was not really complicated because these ships were so big that the pirates just needed a little ship, hiding behind a stone, come to the other ship, take over the other ship, kill all the people, have all the gold. It's easy, isn't it? Well, and of course they were supported by the English, the French, and the Dutch because, you know, they got a letter of marque and they say, come on, just kill all the Spanish so we don't have to do it, keep the gold and have fun there. Okay, and like I told before, a lot of islands, nobody knew these islands, all these islands. It was effectively impossible to any navy to police, and many islands were unclaimed or uninhabited, so perfect. And all in all, it's added up to a freebooter's paradise. First of all, like every growing business, you need people who are doing the work. So, but that's the question. Why did Europeans choose to leave their home country and work over the ocean? Well, the thing is, they didn't say, why not going to the Caribbean? It's so cold here in Germany. It's not really funny in England. I don't like the Austrians, so go to another continent. Well, it wasn't like that. So let's go back to the end of the medieval in Europe. You know how it was in the medieval. Kings were fighting each other all the time or fought together against their dangerous religious enemy in Jerusalem. And the normal people, they were fucked anyway. They had to work for the Lord or the whatever. They were pressed into the different armies, died young, and were hoping for a better life in heaven. So quite a shitty life. But at least most of them had enough to eat. They went to the forest and caught some deer. They were growing some vegetables on the fields everybody was using and lived their boring life. But then something very strange happened. You know this story from Robin Hood. Maybe you heard about this thing called Robin Hood, where the very, very, very bad sheriff of Nottingham said the Nottingham forest now cannot be used by the normal people. So this is really true. Beginning in the 16th century, the lords of England, for example, said, hey, come on, this is my field, this is my forest. So God gave it to me, the king gave it to me, so it's mine. So what the fuck are you doing here, you fucking farmer? I mean, come on, you have to work for me, not to work for yourself. So they began to look after their properties. And to make sure nobody uses them, they built fences. A lot of fences. Fences weren't really used in these days, so it was really strange. One day you are working in the, you walk into the forest, get a little deer to eat, and then the next day there is a fence, and maybe there is a soldier saying you, if you cross this fence, I kill you. Well, no politician, no lord, no knight came to the clue that they were stealing the commons from the common people. So like, it was used to use the commons. Commons means there's a field, I can use it. There's a forest, you can use it, and I can use it. We all can use it. But now there are fences. Those people, they had nothing more to eat and tried to make their living with other works. In these times, the first proletarian movement started. They wanted their commons back, fought against the lords, a lot of little wars, but they always lost those battles, unfortunately. A lot of those people ended up on the street and became even poorer than they already were. Well, someday the politicians in England thought, what shall we do with all those people? I mean, they don't work. They steal, they are dirty, but we can't kill them all because, first of all, we need our soldiers in all our wars, and on the other hand, it wouldn't look that good if we could, if we kill all our people. Even in those days, it would be a little bit strange. But the strange thing is, these poor people, they were part of their own apocalypse, because a lot of former farmers had to work for the government now, had to work for the lords. They had to destroy all their woods by themselves, they built all the harbors and ships, and they were the crew in the growing number of merchant ships. So they were the base of the capitalism coming now. Be aware. Another fact, why a lot of people, so now we come, why did those people go to America? Prisons haven't been a place for the masses in those days. So the politicians decided, well, let's bring them to America. By the way, that's the second picture of Google. In Google, if you put in America. Well, think about it. I have no idea. They thought, well, we have some colonies there. No one wants to go there by choice, because normally you died there when you went there. So let's force them. And, well, they did. But thankfully, a lot of them were rebels as well. For example, the crew of the ship Sea Venture, that's the real Sea Venture. First time I think that the picture is really about that, what I'm saying. In 69, the ship was on its way to the Virginia colony. Oh, wrong picture. Go back. Okay. Virginia colony, you know the story of the Virginia colony. The people there found nothing to eat. They started eating themselves. Then Pocahontas came, gave them something to eat. They ate it. Then they killed the Indians, and America was born. Yeah, I wrote in an article that about 70% of the first inhabitants of Virginia had chosen to live with the Indians, because the Indians had always something to eat, and it was a little bit more nicer than in Virginia when they started to eat each other. The Sea Venture came in a horrifying storm near the Bermudas. Why ever, they survived and landed on the Bermudas, and they found a paradise there on the Bermudas. Fruits everywhere, pigs running around the forest, and a wonderful weather. The officers of the ship, they started to give commands. Build a new ship, come on, do this, do that. But the crew, they were thinking, wait a minute, I mean, why exactly should we build a new ship going to Virginia, work there as their slaves, and die maybe in a year? So they said, fuck you, and went into the forest. Lived their Robinson life there, and were happy. Unfortunately, the officers had all the guns, so they stopped the rebellion and forced the workers to build a new ship. They arrived in Virginia, and 80% of them died in the first year. So what did we learn till now? What did you learn till now? Okay, maybe I can, because I wrote it down. What did we learn till now? The workers were the most important part in building up the first international system of capitalism, and they were totally fucked. So, we were talking about the golden age of piracy. Let's come to the first famous pirate group of this time, the Buccaneers. Those were mostly English settlers in the Caribbean, escaping from the Spanish to Tortuga. You know, Tortuga, very important city in history of piracy. There they lived together with the native clans, and their name, by the way, was native origin as well. Bucan meant the practice of smoking meat, and smoked meat was quite important dish on every ship, very yummy. The Buccaneers had one big goal, fight against the Spanish. Like I told you before, Spain at this time was the most important sea nation, transporting gold and silver, and especially the Brits wanted to have power on the oceans, and as well, so they helped the Buccaneers by letters of marque, and so they were quite successful. The Buccaneers were quite interesting in their hometowns, in Tortuga and other cities. They were living quite a very communistic life, including sharing all the goods without big hierarchies. But the Buccaneers were not that sort of pirates we have in our minds. Of course, the Buccaneers were fighting on the ocean as well, but most of the time, their main project was to rob Spanish cities like Havana. And therefore, they were using the idiocy of the Spanish defenders. And let me demonstrate. Johannes, can you come, please? I need you for a demonstration. Sorry, but you're the best dressed man here. Yeah, you're looking. Come on, go up here. Yeah, okay. So imagine this this is the harbor of Havana. Johannes?
Yeah, yeah.
You are the soldier, and this is the ocean, okay?
Okay. So,
okay. All your guns in this direction. Okay? All your guns are on the sea. Like this is a gun.
Okay.
And you're just this direction. If I'm a buccaneer and I come over the sea, shoot, I'm dead. So the buccaneers fought. Why don't you go behind?
Why am I not looking?
Because the Spanish were never thinking about an attack from behind. So the buccaneers came from behind and killed all the Spanish.
But I'm so well dressed.
Yeah. Thank you. Kriegst du Zuckerl noch. Yeah. Okay. That was the job of the buccaneers. Very easy. Spanish people are idiots in these days. I'm sorry. The Spanish army was quite idiot. And like it was in the North Sea some 100 years ago, the international politics changed. The English, the Dutch, the French, and even the Spanish found out that a permanent war is not the best way to make money with a globalized capitalism. Except of selling weapons, of course. So the pirates lost their letters of marque and were criminals from now on, you know? There's this corsar is a very nice German word, I think, but I think it's French. For pirates using letters of marque. And they're very, the corsar, they're very, very nice people. They are mostly, they have blue blood in their bodies and they love all the women and they get married to the governor's daughter and things like that. But now they were pirates again. No way at all. Okay. Pirates lost the letters of marque. And if they caught you as a pirate, you lost your life, you know, international law. So why did people choose to become a pirate at all? You have to imagine the life on a merchant ship or a navy ship in these days was really, really, really shitty. You normally didn't choose this way of life at all. Either you were a criminal, and instead of to the prison, they sent you to the ships, or you were just forced to work there because you were at the wrong place at the wrong time. You were crossing the street, then the British Navy came and said, you work on the ship now. That's how it worked. Yeah. You didn't get a lot of money, and mostly you didn't get any money at all because the investors thought, like the first, global merchant system of the Brits was based on invested capital. Like William Shakespeare was a big investor in these things, for example. The investors thought, why paying a salary if the guy dies 2 years later anyway? And this was true. Illnesses, very bad food, and fighting all the time made the ship to a very deadly working place. And if you survived all these things, you had to deal with hundreds of different ways of torture for doing wrong things. Like if you were homosexual, for example, or if you drank too much, you were tortured. That's how it worked. You can see the ship of these times at the first organization of a factory. Everyone had to do his special job, had no right at all, and died very young. That's what a factory in these times was all about. But these ships, they were not just a bad alternative to the prison. They were a rebellious melting pot of different cultures as well. And a lot of the prisoners there were not arrested for murdering or stealing or whatever. They were there because of political reasons. So they were Quakers. What's Quaker in Quaker, for example, they were Quakers, or Quaker in German, Quack in French. a lot of religious radicals and Republicans came together on these ships, and so the ideas of revolution and fighting against the authorities made his way around the globe. I know that's a little bit... Oh, whatever.
Romantic,
yeah, but it's true. Woo-hoo. And to make sure... the officers don't understand what you are talking about. They created an own language. It was based on bad English, of course, like mine, but with influences from all different countries and cultures, mostly from African and Caribbean slaves. You also can hear it in the music of these days. There is sometimes a mixture of African rhythm and Irish melody, for example. Little sidestep, because I was talking about Africa and Ireland. A lot of slaves were working in colonies, in North and South America, and Well, there were a lot of slave rebellions there, of course, because they had nothing to eat there. It was really tough. So there were a lot of rebellions, mostly together from slaves from Africa and slaves from Ireland. Slaves from Ireland weren't called slaves, but they were slaves. So the Brits thought, okay, that's not really good because, you know, we need those people to work. So they had a very good and unfortunately very influential idea. They said to the Irish people, well, look, you're Irish. You're a slave, but you're just a little bit better than the slaves from Africa. So the Irish said, ah, okay, we didn't know that before. thanks for the information. If you need some help, we can do that. And they get a little bit more of food, they get a little bit more of water, and so they weren't fighting each other, fighting together again. By the way, that was the first, let's say, the first idea of racism in the world. Thank you, England. If one of these ships we talked before was attacked by pirates, many times the crew decided to join the so-called criminals because the pirate life was much more better than the Nautic proletarian life on a merchant or warship. You know that from the movies, and let me tell you, it is true. Yeah. You maybe think I'm telling you some legends of communist pirate societies and that everything was good and heroic and nice on a pirate ship. Well, to be honest, I will, because the pirate life was actually really nice. First of all, yes, there were pirate assholes as well. They were dealing with slaves, raped and murdered just for fun, and had fascistic leadership on their boat. But there were some other communities as well, like the articles of the crew of the pirate Bartholomew Roberts. These articles, like the rules, began with, every man has a vote in affairs of moment, has equal title to the fresh provisions or strong liquors at any time sized, and may use them at pleasure unless a scarcity make it necessary for the good of all to vote a retrenchment. A Dutch governor of Mauritius of the 18th century, he met a pirate crew and he commented, every man had a such say as the captain, and each man carried his own weapons in his blanket. That must be very strange for the governor of Mauritius, because, sorry, Mauritius, you know, is next to Africa, but it was the same thing these days. So there were piracy in the Caribbean and in North Africa, but because of the movie, we always talk about the Caribbean. But see it as one movement. Back to the weapon. This was profoundly threatening to the order of European society because where firearms were restricted to the upper class and provided a stark contrast to the merchant ships, where anything that could be used as a weapon was kept under lock and key, and to the Navy where the primary purpose of the Marines stationed on naval vessels was to keep the sailors in their place. The captain on a pirate ship only had the right of command in the head of battle. Otherwise, all decisions were made by the whole ship's company. This radical democracy was not necessarily very efficient, to be honest. Often pirate ships tended to wander rather aimlessly as the crew changed its mind. Like this one said, let's go to Havana. No, we need rum. Okay, so let's have a vote for rum, and mostly the rum one. But yeah, okay. But it was even still very nice. Everyone on the ship got an equal share of the booty, and the captain usually only one or one and a half share. So let's say, okay, you're the captain, you are in command, so you got a little bit more, but you sleep in the same bed as we do. Okay. The wreck of St. Bellamy's pirate ship, the Wydaw, it was called, which was discovered in 1984, provides good evidence of this. Among the artifacts recovered, there was rare West African gold jewelry, which had been hacked apart with clear knife marks, which suggested that there has been an attempt to divide it equally. And they were class conscious. When they entered an official ship, they staged some sort of trial there. When the crew members said their captain was an asshole, the captain was tortured. If he was all right, he was allowed to go home. And their inner society was quite social as well. Pirates often went into some sort of consortship with one another, where if one died, the other got his property. And like, I'm here with my my concert, and he said, okay, we are driving out to rob some ships. You stay here, because if I get hurt, I need somebody to help me. That worked very fine. Pirate articles also commonly included a form of mutual aid where injured shipmates, unable to participate in the fighting, would receive their share as a pension. Pirates took this sort of solidarity very seriously. At least one pirate crew compensated their wounded only to discover that they had nothing left. From the articles of Bartholomew Roberts we heard before, he said, if any man should lose a limb or become a cripple in their service, he was to have $800 out of the public stock, and for lesser hurts, proportionably. And $800 in the 18th century is really a lot, believe me. Well, there are some other examples. For the Americans in the audience, like, you know, health insurance, maybe you don't know that, was quite a nice thing in the pirate society. So coming back to Bartholomew Roberts, this is a list somebody found, and it's true, it's the list of the crew of Bartholomew Roberts. One piastre is about, I think, let's say, 50 euros, I think, something about 50 euros. So 100 piastres for a finger, 100 piastres for an ear, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, the worst thing was to lose. I don't know, what do you think? Is it harder to lose both legs or both hands? I saw this list 2 years ago and I'm still not sure. Hmm? Well, that's true, yeah. That's maybe what they thought about in these times. Okay, yeah. Thanks. I will write for my next talk. I will say, well, I was thinking for years, what could it be? And then a man told me the truth. Thank you. well, on his ship, there was, by the way, one interesting rule as well. So he had a lot of rules. He said, every man has the same rights, so he can drink rum whenever he wants to. If he wanted to drink rum, you could drink rum. But there were some other rules as well, like lighting a candle on deck after 8 p.m., they killed you. By the way, you got the same penalty, and this was really written, for being dressed poor. So when you think about the picture you have of a pirate, he looks maybe like me, but with very bad clothes. Bartholomew Roberts, no. You were killed if you would look like me. The pirates certainly seem to have more fun than the poor suffering counterparts on naval or merchant vessels. They sure had some pretty wild parties. For example, in 1669, just off the coast of Hispaniola, some of Henry Morgan's, he was a pirate, and then he was a governor killing pirates. He were in charge of some buccaneers, and they blew up their own ship during a particularly nice party, which, like all good pirate celebrations, included matching, drinking, firing on the ship's guns, and then whoosh, the ship was gone. Okay. But they are still remembering it. It was a great party. Coming to a serious topic, homosexuality. The Royal Navy periodically continued brutal anti-buggery campaigns on ships on which men fight to be confirmed together for years. So if they thought, well, those two people could be homosexual, they were tortured. Not at the pirates. One of the early buccaneer states of Hispaniola and Tortuga, they lived in a kind of homosexual union known as Matelotage. It's from the French word for sailor, I found out. I don't know if it's true, but Matelotage sounds very French. Impossible, the origin of the word mate, meaning companion. They were holding their possessions in common with the survivor inheriting. Tortuga was a buccaneer city. After that, it was a French city again. And one of the first actions of the first French governor was to import hundreds of prostitutes to Tortuga, hoping thereby to wean the buccaneers away from this practice we talked before. And it is also significant that in no pirate articles are there any rules against homosexuality. And because if you remember, lighting a candle, you were killed. If they were so strict about their rules, if they would have something against homosexuality, they wouldn't have written it down, because they wrote everything down. Okay, let's come to female pirates. female pirates. You all know Anne Bonny and Mary, most of you know Anne Bonny and Mary Read, but there were some others. For example, Charlotte Berry. It's a very bad picture, and I think it's not really... I had some problems with open office pictures in presentations thing, so it looks very strange. She was born in England, 1636, and she followed her husband into the Navy by dressing as a man. When she was forced aboard on Africa-bound vessel, she led a mutiny against the captain, who had assaulted her, cutting off his head with a dagger. She then turned pirate and became a captain, her ship cruising the African coast, capturing gold ships. That was her life. So now we come to the famous female pirates, Anne Bonny. She was born as the illegitimate child of a maidservant in Ireland, and she was raised in male discus, her father pretending she was the child of a relative entrusted to his care. She ran away to Caribbean, where she fell in love with the captain of a pirate crew called Calico Jack Rackham. He was so called because of his outlandish and colorful clothing. Calico Jack Rackham. They stole the ship from a harbor, and for the next couple of years, Bonny was Rackham's shipmate and lover, as their crew raided shipping in the Caribbean and American coast waters. And on this ship, she met Mary Read. She was born as an illegitimate child as well, and brought up as a little boy as well by her mother, in order to pass her off to her relatives as her legitimate son. However that works, I have no idea. She had to be tough to deal with these harsh circumstances of her life, and by the time she was a teenager, she was already growing bold and strong, the biography says. Mary Sams seems to have liked her male identity and enlisted herself as a sailor on a man of war, and then as an English soldier in the war in Flanders. At the end of the war, she joined a Dutch ship bound for the West Indies. When her ship was captured by Calico Jack Rackham's pirate crew, which included Anne Bonny, she decided to throw her lot in with the pirates. She seems to have taken to pirate life and began a new romance with one of the crew, and when her lover got into an argument with a fellow pirate and was challenged to settle it in the pirate's customary way at sword and pistol, like a duel, Mary said to him, let me do it, I'm better. And it was true. Mary saved her lover by picking a fight with the contender, challenging him to a duel 2 hours before that he was due to fight with her lover, and then running him through with her cutlass. Rackham, Bonny, and Read, they were all caught in 1720 by a British Navy sloop of Jamaica. It was not very heroic, this fight, because the crew, they were all totally drunk, which is quite a common event. And hit in the hold. There was only one other apart from Bonny and Read who was brave enough to fight. So two women and one man were fighting against the British Navy because all the others were singing and drinking all the time. In disgust, Mary Read fired a pistol down into the hold, killing one and wounding others. That's what the report says. 18 members of the crew had already been tried and sentenced to hang by the time the woman came to court. Three of them, including Rackham, were later hung in chains at prime locations to act as a moral instruction and public example to the seamen who could pass their rotting corpse. However, Mary Read insisted that men of courage like herself did not fear death. Both Bonny and Read escaped execution because they pleaded their bellies being quick with child and prayed the execution might be stayed. So they said, we are religious now and we are pregnant, so don't kill us. But some weeks after that, they died in the prison because they became ill in the prison. Like you always became ill in the prison or on a ship normally. There is this story that Anne fell in love with Mary because she was dressed as a man and blah, 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 blah. But I think this is just a fantasy of male historians and sounds like the plot of lesbian pirate porn. Is there one? I mean, Johannes? Yeah. With this story? With Anne Bonny and Mary Read, this story? Yeah, you showed me once, I remember, but... That's Pirates of the Caribbean porn thing. Okay. How is my timing? Can you tell me that? 10 more minutes. Okay, perfect, because I'm coming to the end. In the end, not the end of my talk, well, quite the end of my talk, but the end of the golden age of piracy. In 1700, a new law was introduced to allow for the swift trial and execution of pirates wherever they may be found. Previously, they had to be transported back to London to stand trial and be executed at the low tide mark at Wapping, it was called there, and that was pretty tough, because if you caught a pirate in the Caribbean and have to back to London, a lot of things can happen on this way. But now, the Act for the More Effectual Suppression of Piracy, it was called, also enforced the use of the death penalty and gave rewards for resisting pirate attack. But most importantly, it was not trialed by jury, but by a special court of naval officers. You know this story from a movie called Pirates of the Caribbean Part 2. The famous Captain Kidd. By the way, Captain Kidd. Captain Kidd is the only pirate we know about who put all his gold to an island, dig a hole, put all the gold in, and then drew a card with a big black X. There is my money. This is the only case. And I thought, yeah, why should I do that? Because, okay, bringing my gold to an island, no problem. Hiding it from the others, okay, but why drawing a map with an X? I have no idea. Didn't help at all. He was one of the first victims of this new law. Indeed, the law was partially rushed through specifically, so that it could be applied to him. He was hanged at execution dock in Wapping. He was the last brought to England. And his body was then placed in a gibbet coated with tar to help preserve it and hung at Tilbury Point to be a terror to all that saw it. The blackened and rotting corpse was intended to serve as a very clear reminder to the common seamen of the risks of resisting the disciplines of wage labor. Well, that really worked. Kidd's case was unusual in that he was executed in London. After 1700, under the provisions of the new law, the war against the pirates would increasingly take place around the peripheries of empire. So now you could kill a pirate in Jamaica, or on Cuba. And it wouldn't just be one or two corpses that dangled from cross-dress down near the tide mark, but sometimes 20 or 30 at a time. Very romantic Caribbean sea, drinking rum and 30 pirates hanging and rotting next to you. In one particularly significant case in 1722, the British Navy tried 169 pirates of Bartholomew Roberts, we heard so much of him today, of his crew and executed 52 of them at Cape Coast Castle on the Guinea coast. The 72 Africans on board, if they were free or not, they didn't care, they were sold into slavery, which perhaps some of them had escaped for a short while. You have to imagine, and let's talk about around the year 1730. There was this growing idea of state in the British Empire and in the French Empire and the Dutch state. This rise of the state. The state is important, the state has to make money, the state needs good ship to defend itself and to make much more money. And those pirates, they didn't really fit into that concept, because on a pirate ship you had maybe 30 nationalities. The color of your skin didn't matter, it didn't matter what language you were talking, you just had to be a good pirate. The end of the Golden Age, the beginning of this end, was marked by the ex-buccaneer Sir Henry Morgan's return to Jamaica as governor with express orders to destroy the pirates. Naval patrols, they flushed them from their lairs, and mass hangings eliminated the leaders. Ultimately, the pirates' war on trade had become too successful to be tolerated. That's the problem. The state was fighting to allow commerce to flow unimpeded and capital to accumulate, bringing wealth to the merchants and revenue to the state. Yeah, very sad thing. Just 30 seconds talking about today. The situation in Somalia, because when we think about piracy today, we normally think about Somalia, is quite a little bit the same like in the Caribbean of the 17th and 18th century. They have no government controlling there. a lot of business at the sea done by international fishing companies stealing the food of the common fishermen at the coast, and everything combined with radical religious ideas. Oh la la. I don't know if this is romantic as well. You have to decide by yourself. Maybe in 200 years we will talk about famous pirates from Somalia. I'm finished. If you have questions, okay. If I don't know if I have answers, thank you very much. You can ask questions or...
What about gay rights in the Somalian piracy?
Well, I think they have to work on that. I think they have to work on that, yes.
And women leaders?
They're working on that already. Already, they're already working. I read it on Twitter today at the panel. So, either it was very boring or it was very good. So, okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
So.